This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Good morning. Welcome to The Gardening Show. Phone lines are open. We're live, and we're also on Facebook Live, facebook.com/WESB1075. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Igor.
Well, how are you this week?
Good. Pretty good.
Survived the heat?
Just barely.
So did our plants, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. And they're suffering, but they're surviving.
They're surviving, yep. We're all suffering, but yeah, we're mostly surviving. That's always a plus. So what's on your mind today?
I had it in my mind, too. Rules for plants during the heat.
Guidelines.
Yeah, guidelines.
More than the rules. Right?
Yeah, guidelines. Sure. Yeah. the first thing I want to mention is some of the sprays that we may be using, like herbicide that kills the weeds. Do not spray, this is important, do not spray it anytime the temperature is above 80 or above.
Okay.
Because it can turn what we call volatile. It's a liquid. When you spray it when it's above 80, it comes out of your sprayer and can become a gas right away.
Oh, you mean like evaporation because
yes.
It's so hot? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I think I've mentioned this before, but I got to mention it again. And as a gas, it can float in the air for quite some distance until it touches something that's cooler, like the leaf of your neighbor's plant, possibly, or a shrub or another plant in your yard that you don't want it on. And so it can cause a lot of damage. So the rule is do not spray any herbicide or insecticide even during the heat times.
How far have you noticed that actually travels?
They say it can travel a quarter mile.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Before it can land on a cool surface.
That's some serious airtime. Okay.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it is important to note that. Matter of fact, it's important to really read the directions on a label. I know most people don't do it, so I try to give some of the instructions. But it's important to read all those instructions on the label whenever you're spraying anything. So that's one of the rules of the heat. Another one is what time to really water your plants. Really, any time is a good time during the heat. Now, there are better times and worse times. Really, no time is going to damage your plant.
But to get the most efficiency, I guess, out of the watering, right?
Yeah, when you do early morning, late evening, when it's starting to cool down a bit. That gives that water a chance to really soak into the soil and become available to the plant. If you didn't get a chance to do it and you got to go out there in the heat of the day, afternoon, you're still doing a good job, but you're wasting a bit of water because a lot of it's going to evaporate quite quickly before the plant can consume it.
Right. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So try to do it early or late. But if you need to do it when it's hot, then do it. It's not gonna hurt the plant.
Yeah, just not as efficient. That's all.
Yeah, that's all. And a lot of times, and we don't have to worry about this year so far. When we have a whole bed, it's best off not to water just the plant, but the whole bed. When you water just the plant. Say I have a tomato plant in a 4x4 area, and I just take my sprinkling can and water right there at the base of the tomato plant.
Sure, it's going to disperse into the whole bed anyway.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I gotcha.
Because the water's always going to go towards the dry area. So if the rest of the bed is dry, that water's going to – some of it's going to get wicked away from the tomato plant. So when you are watering, water the whole plant. And – be careful of watering, especially this year. We've had so much rain and the humidity's been so high that I know a lot of us are used to going out and watering every morning or every evening. And this year, it's not been the case. Man, I probably have only watered twice this year. My beds, some of the pots I've watered three or four times because they're staying wet for long, long periods of time, which can cause a lot of damage. That water sits in the soil for a long time and then starts to give off bad gases and starts to grow fungus, and all that can be very harmful to the plant. So really check your plant out. I like to do with potted plants, lift them. I potted them up so I know how much they weigh when the soil's dry. Lift them if they're light, then they probably need a watering. If they're real heavy, then they're probably wet. And, you know, maybe the surface of the soil, that first half inch or inch, is dry, but then you reach down where the roots really are. There, it may be wet there, so try to hold off if that's the case. Another way to do it, in containers mostly, is to just look at the soil. And if it's looks like black coffee, it's a dark color, it's probably wet. If it looks like coffee with cream, a light color, then it's probably dry. So that's a quick check, too, so you can just walk on by and take a look. Another thing with watering that I've always liked to do and suggest, if we're planting that new tree or shrub out there and we don't want to walk out there every day or twice a day, you know, checking to see if it needs water, plant some annuals around that tree when you plant it. And from a long distance, you can see if those annuals are wilting and suffering, probably because there's no water there, then it's time to water. But if they're still perky and looking good, then you, all you got to do is give it a glance, and you don't have to walk way out there with a hose or your watering can and water it. That's a real good indicator
plant. I was going to say, those are what you call an indicator plant.
Yeah. It can save you a lot of time that way, and maybe frustration even, because those annuals are really going to show first if there's enough water or there's not enough water in the soil. And annuals can be cheap. You know, you get a six-pack for a few bucks. Mm-hmm. So it's well worth it when you're planting a new tree or shrub, because that can be a good size investment, a new tree or shrub. And we don't want to just watch it die.
No, slowly.
So it's worth the little extra couple bucks to plant them annuals around there to give you a good indication whether it needs it or not.
How close should they be? I mean, I know it probably depends on the plant that you're putting it next
to. Yeah, they don't have to be real close. I'm going to say 2-3 feet away.
Okay.
You know, if you've, like, I'm thinking of a tree or a shrub, you've dug that nice good size hole, and you should dig a nice good size hole. So plant them 2 or 3 feet away, and that'll give you the thing you need.
should it be in the same hole that you've dug?
Yes. Okay. It should be in the same hole as that tree or shrub.
So if you have dug a hole that's 2 or 3 feet,
yeah,
put it in there.
But if you haven't, you know, it can be a foot away from the trunk of the shrub or the tree. Just use your own judgment and use them as a good indicator plant. Make sure, though, that if you're planting that tree or shrub in the sun, that you use a sun-loving annual. If you're planting it in the shade, then use a shade-loving annual. And, of course, anything you plant in the shade is going to dry out a lot slower than something in the sun. And then even the terrain.
I was going to say, well, what if it, you know, you're putting it by a tree that you planted, but the tree's casting a shadow on the indicator plant?
Oh, that's still fine. Yeah. Because it won't cast that shade all day long. But you can also, there can be a difference in the soil moisture, as if you're on a flat area. That's going to hold that moisture a while. A slope, it may drain a bit quicker. So keep those in mind too. A rocky area or gravelly area, that's going to drain a little bit better than where there's no rocks or gravel. So keep all those things in mind after you've dug the hole, or if somebody else dug it for you, ask them, you know, what was the soil like when you dug it.
814-368-9372. The phone lines are open. If you have a question for the Master Gardener, Bob Harris, please give us a call. Let us know. We're also on Facebook Live, so you can put your question in the comment section, and we'll get to that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about, I'll talk about slugs, because I noticed last night some of the marigolds that I planted are just stems now. The slugs have eaten all the leaves off. So the thing that I like to do is get my little salt shaker, go out there after the sun sets. You'll see that the slugs are all moving towards the plants. So I just give them a little sprinkle, and then they're gone. But there are other ways, you know. There are nice slug baits, but I think I've talked about this in the past. You got to protect that bait from any other animal outside. So I like to put that slug bait underneath a saucer, or underneath a stone, underneath a piece of wood, and underneath something, so the dogs or the animals can't get to it, because it can make them sick too. So protect that if you're using that slug bait, if you don't want to walk out there on a slug hunt with your salt shaker.
I can just imagine you, like Elmer Fudd, be very quiet.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm hunting slugs.
That's what it must look like. Me out there walking around with a salt shaker and shaking it once in a while. But it helps to control them, because each slug can lay dozens and dozens of eggs. So each one that I kill, I've just eliminated another couple dozen slugs.
Wow.
So it's well worth it to pay attention. You know, it's no fun to pick them up and squeeze them. Or,
ew.
Yeah, because no. they have quite a slime layer on them, and it's very difficult to get it off your skin.
Ugh.
So I like the slug baits or the salt shaker. And you'll also notice what plants they prefer and which ones they don't. They won't go up on my tomato plant, but those marigolds that are near the tomato plant, yeah, they love them a lot.
Mm.
And you can always tell if you don't know if there's slugs out there or not. You can tell by holes in the leaf, and they're usually nice, round, smooth-edged holes. A lot of insects make holes in the leaves, but the slugs make a nice, round, smooth hole. So, and they also can leave a slime trail that, if you look at it just right, you'll see the shiny mark. And that's a sign of the slugs, if you weren't there to catch them in the act.
Right.
So you know they're there.
They leave evidence.
Yeah, they leave evidence. The daylilies are all blooming like crazy right now around Bradford. And it looks like it's going to be a spectacular blooming year for them. But then the aftercare, when those blossoms die, it's a good idea to go to the blossom where it died off, trace the stem as far down to the ground as you can, clip that off. That's going to send a signal to the plant, because all plants want to flower, make seed, and that carries on their genes. So without that flower stem and seed pod, that forces that daylily to bloom again. Now, if you don't, of course, it's kind of unsightly if you just leave them old brown stems there in that old seed pod. So it's a good idea that after those blossoms are done, trim that stem back. Not the whole plant, just that flower stem. And you'll have another good bloom later on in the summer. So that's one of the hints for keeping the daylilies blooming, which we're also noticing the dogwoods around Bradford. Tremendous bloom this year. Now, you won't get that every year. You know, like most plants, they do have their growth spurts, and then their times of recovery and so on. This year happens to be a dogwood growth spurt. No matter where I go, I see the dogwoods all over the country here have bloomed very, very well. And so you'll notice It's a really nice flowering tree. Now, the dogwood tree.
Does that have to do with the temperature or the environment for that year, or is it just every couple of years you get that huge bloom?
It has a lot to do with the environment.
Okay.
A lot to do with that. But I'm going to suggest that since they're blooming so well this year, there may not be quite as good a bloom next year because it takes a lot of energy out of that plant, out of that tree, to make all those blooms. And so now they'll have to recover. And with a plant, you know, that can take a year or two to recover. So they will bloom again next year. But this year, just an abundance of blooms. And, of course, that means an abundance of energy that the plant has stored up for a few years. A lot of plants do that they can't make a big bloom every single year because, again, takes so much energy out of them.
Now, what about, can you trick it somehow? Like, you know how you can use fertilizer for annuals. You say get the most bang out of the short time that they're here. Is there any kind of food that you can give to a tree that size?
Yeah, there is. There is. And I don't suggest it.
Okay.
But there is, because anytime you fertilize a tree or shrub, it can force new growth. And new growth is extremely susceptible to any disease or insect attack. That's only my feeling. I don't fertilize any trees or shrubs ever. And I've had them growing in my yard for well over 40 years, going on 50 years.
You just don't get the picture-perfect, beautiful tree every year with the big blooms.
Well, I do, because I don't get the insect and disease attacks that go along with it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't mess with nature is what you're saying.
Now, that's not everybody's way of doing it. Some people love the fertilizer trees and shrubs, and that's fine, you know, as long as you know that now you're a little more susceptible to insect pest and disease and fungal diseases, so that you may have to spend a little extra time caring for that too.
Okay.
Great. Okay.
Can we take a short break?
Okay.
Thank our sponsor, Worth W. Smith.
Yep.
And we'll be back maybe with some show and tell.
You brought
in a couple plants with you, and we'll show that on Facebook Live, and we'll describe it for you. It's The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. Back in 30, it's B107.5 FM.
Is your lawn looking a little brown and ragged? They have what you need at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find many options in the line of garden hoses, sprinkler heads, and fertilizers to turn that lawn back to the lush green carpet that we all love. But why stop there when you see the variety of decorative stone pavers, mulch, railroad ties, and landscape timbers? Let their staff at Worth W. Smith help you turn your backyard into the oasis you're looking for. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And we're back with The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Master Gardener Bob Harris along with us. And we're on Facebook.com/WESB107.5. If you've already saved us on your favorites or your likes, just search for WESB. We'll show up. And you can see our live video right now. And we have a couple things right front and center here, some plants in the corner of the screen.
Yeah.
Tell us what you brought today.
Some more perennials. And normally, perennials have larger leaves, and this one here has a real fine leaf. This is coreopsis, or tick seed, a lot of people like to call it. And this one in particular is moonbeam. That's the color. It's such a real light yellow. It shows up at night. That can be important to some of us that are out enjoying our deck patio or our gardens in the evenings. You want to find colors that show up late at night, and this one will. But real fine texture, because, again, texture is just as important as the flower or shape of a plant. So it's hard to get a fine textured plant in our area. So this is coreopsis moonbeam. This is the yellow blooming one. And
what else do they come in?
Here's another one. The same plant.
That's the same thing. Okay.
Yeah. And this one is is also Coreopsis tick seed, and they call this sweet tart, that color. Now, they do come in other colors, too. And they
What would
all,
you describe that color as? Like a
wow, a, kind of a light raspberry, would you say?
Yeah, it's like a mixture of brown and purple, maybe.
Okay, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody sees color a little different, which makes it neat. They'll bloom most of the summer. And a neat plant, they will multiply quite quickly. So that's a big benefit, too, for us that are growing perennials. Very, very little care. And I really have never seen any insects or pests that like to attack the plant to the point where they can hurt it. It's a real good perennial. That's Coreopsis or tick seed, which it's called. Now, an oddball, and this one takes me back to my grandma's days. This is hens and chicks, this is called. I hope that shows up there.
And in quotations, the tag says ruby heart?
Ruby heart, yeah. That's because it has a lot of ruby in its leaves and in the heart of the plant. But there's a lot of different hens and chicks. Some people call them live forever because they do. They take extremely low care. This is one of those plants where you can almost buy it, throw it down in a garden, and walk away, and it'll take root and grow there forever and ever.
To me, the leaves are reminiscent of almost like a cactus-like.
Yeah, yeah. It's closely related to the cactus. It's really a succulent. Real thick leaves are full of water. It will bloom, and the bloom is usually a big, long stem that comes up with a kind of a light purplish flower. And they do multiply. They throw off what we call these little babies.
I guess those would be the chicks.
Yeah, the chicks.
And
yeah,
the hens, okay. And chicks.
And that will take root in the ground and produce another plant that becomes a mother that will produce the chicks again, or the babies, and just keep spreading that way. And again, very little care, except they like lots of sun. They go by their name, that live forever in any type of soil. So that's a neat ground cover type perennial that is very rewarding because you don't have to fuss over it.
Hens and chicks.
Hens and chicks.
Who comes up with these names?
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I wonder how the devil they do come up with some of these names. It's mostly a descriptive thing if it isn't named after a botanist or the person that discovered the plant or someone in his family. A lot of plants got their name that way too. But that's the name of those.
Now, if you listen real closely, though, they do make a sound. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Hens and chicks.
There it is. Yeah.
See?
You got to listen close, though, don't you?
Yeah. All right, that's enough.
What's wrong with you?
Sorry about that. My parents ask me that all the time. What's wrong with you?
So a couple nice perennials. A lot of different perennials out there to choose from that grow in Bradford. And these are just some of them. Next week, I'm probably going to start bringing in some shrubs.
Oh, okay. That'll be fun.
There's a huge choice of shrubs that grow well here in Bradford.
Good. I'm thinking about planting more myself.
Oh, good.
A little bit more privacy. So,
yeah.
So that'll be a great topic for me. And we're all out of time this
week. Oh, okay.
Okay. So we'll hold that for next week. And thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
The Master Gardener, Bob Harris. And the Gardening Show. You're going to be singing that all day now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Have a great day. Bye.